Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Shanklinburg, your host, and Tim Rogers is joining me again today. And we've got our cup of coffee, and we've just been talking about a couple of questions and areas that we've heard from people. So we really appreciate the input and feedback. So, Tim, I mean, which one of what you've heard recently is a favorite we should talk about today?
Well, Fred, today I thought we would talk about incoming inspection. I think a lot of people working quality and reliability assume that they can use incoming inspection or an audit inspection of some kind on their suppliers' deliverables as a way of assuring quality. And
it also gives them something to do every day.
That's true. It will definitely keep you busy. And yet, I hate incoming inspection. I always felt like I was doing the supplier's work for them, or basically I was checking their work. And I realized that in the continuum of cost of quality, it's a lot better if you find issues with your supplier's incoming materials before your customer, you know, your end customer finds problems with your supplier's incoming material. So it's if you think about external cost of failure, you know, warranties or damages that you have to pay because of quality or reliability problems with your customer,
right,
versus internal cost of failure. Internal cost of failure would be defects that you find before you ship your product. So incoming inspection, you know, at least it does have the benefit of making sure that you don't use defective material in your production processes. So it's not, you know, at first glance, there's a reason why it's as popular as it is. You know, there's a reason why people think it's a good idea. Were you ever involved in incoming inspection, Fred?
Against my better judgment. It was one of the, I mean, there's a couple scenarios where I think it actually makes sense.
Yeah.
Yet all too often I've seen it where it's just done carte blanche. We take stuff out of wrappers, we take out inspection, we put it on test jigs, we make measurements, we do all kinds of crazy stuff. Like you said, it's just, you know, looking over the shoulder of the supplier. But there's this competing concept of stock to dock, you know.
Right.
But there's barriers to that. And you just outlined some of the benefits of making sure that we don't inadvertently put a bad component into, say, a $1,000 device.
Right.
And have to either do repair or scrap the $1,000 piece.
Which is obviously what we want to try to avoid. But is there a better way of avoiding that? I guess that's what we're really talking about. Incoming inspection has always felt like a necessary evil. It's something that we find ourselves doing, but I just hate the idea.
You're not alone there, Tim. I think there's this, Deming and other quality folks have said you can't inspect in quality.
Exactly. I think that's so well put. The objective here is to make sure that bad parts don't get built in the first place, not that we prevent bad parts from entering our production.
Right.
You see what I mean? And I think that's what incoming inspection is. It's about looking at everything that we receive, sorting through them to make sure that we're only using good parts. Okay, it's better than nothing. It's better than not doing any inspection at all. And in fact, there are some people that advocate moving incoming inspection on your side to outbound inspection on the supplier's
side. Well, I've even seen that where the receiving department looks for a certificate basically from the supplier with that shipment saying they certify it's better than a certain percentage defect rate.
Right. And I agree that's marginally better. At least it's their labor that's involved in that inspection, mm-hmm. as opposed to your labor. You know, it's people on your side that are doing the inspection.
Right.
But again, the goal here is not to, you can't, as you said, Fred, you can't test in quality. What we should be asking our suppliers to do is not more testing. We should be asking them to get a better handle, better control over their production processes so that they're not building bad parts in the first place.
Right.
That should really be the objective.
Yeah. And if their entire process is predicated on doing incoming inspection for their suppliers, then I think we have a lot of education to do.
Exactly right.
But you're
exactly
talking right. about, you know, process control. And so one example we ran into years ago is ceramic capacitors, multi-layer ceramics.
Mm-hmm.
They're very inexpensive. They're easy to monitor and test, but you use zillions of them
right.
on electronics. So it's not practical nor beneficial to measure them all before
right.
you put them down. And we also know that repairing them on a circuit board is expensive. If you find it after you assemble it, it tends to be destructive to the board and
absolutely.
All kinds of problems. So incoming inspection is just not practical from a logistics point of view. But we, like you said, the ultimate goal is make sure it's right. So we worked with some of the suppliers, instead of asking them to inspect the units before they ship them to us and only ship as good units and things like that, assuming that the shipping and transport, storage, all that stuff didn't cause the failures.
Right.
So leave that on the table for a second.
Good point.
Is we changed the question to, well, what causes the failures? You know, what in your assembly
yes.
process, what's the critical steps in the process that would generate components that won't work in our product? In,
right.
in general. And it became very clear that it was the curing step of the ceramic. So
right.
yeah, they had to carefully control the pressure and temperature in order for the components to be good. So instead of asking for outgoing inspection or what to look for in incoming inspection, we asked for control charts and
good.
Monitoring. And the hard part was getting them to fully grasp what SPC was, you know, but once they saw the benefit of that and their internal scrap rate went down, I mean, there was something in it for them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right? Yeah. I mean, it does, if you could run into a situation where you know a lot more about SPC and process control than your supplier does. And I think I agree with you. I think it really does benefit both sides. To give them a little bit of education, to work with them, to help figure out what the source of process variability is, and then how to eliminate those causes of variability.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's going to save everybody on testing and inspection. We were talking before about moving incoming inspection on your side to outbound inspection on their side. Well, it's still a cost. This is still money.
Somebody's going to pay for it. Yeah.
Exactly. These are non-value added activities. And again, the real solution here is exactly what you described. Now, I don't want to sound completely naive here, Fred. I know that just to cover ourselves, we still like to do an occasional audit on incoming material, and being able to completely eliminate incoming inspection may be impossible, but you know AQL there are lots of good tables and references that you can use to figure out what the proper sample size should be for a lot of incoming material,
mm-hmm.
and then what the acceptable number of defects are in that sample size.
Okay.
In other words, if you exceed a certain number of defects in that sample, you are justified in rejecting the entire lot.
That's right. That's
right. Right. And these are very well published. So I think it's still worthwhile to audit your suppliers from time to time, but we really got to find a way to significantly reduce the amount of time and effort we're putting into inspection and shift that to prevention instead.
Well, there's a whole concept I've heard phrased as trust and verify.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, and I've seen this where it's not necessarily as rigorous as a lot sampling algorithm where I take, you know, 20 units out of a lot of a particular size and run mm-hmm. them through the test.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's that's just a sampling technique to do incoming inspection, and it still right. takes resources and so on.
It does.
So, I mean, back to the capacitor issue, what we did is, I mean, it was nowhere near a statistically relevant sample. But on occasion, like once a month or every couple of weeks, we would take a 100 components and we did more of a reliability test, or if it was electrolytic capacitors, we actually did a chemical teardown of it. We said, what are the components in this device? And at one point, and it was prompted because of the electrolytic solution formula mishap some years ago.
Okay. Where,
because if that's not right, those capacitors, they euphemistically we call it venting, but they, they explode.
right. I remember that.
But think of any component. If it's a, like a coating, and I, if I can cross-section it and take and understand exactly the thickness of that coating, or if it's a weld, and if I can decompose that or deconstruct that weld to make sure that I get good chemical bonding.
Yeah.
You know, all of those types of things that you don't want to do on every sample because they're destructive.
Right.
Right. Yet if I did it on even just a fraction of the, a very, very small fraction on occasion, say a, just a totally random occasional take of one apart and look at it.
Right.
And then share it back to your vendor saying, hey, look, you know, we noticed that the formula you're using is right on target. Good job. You know?
Yeah.
And so what we found was that the first time we presented it back to a supplier, I got a phone call immediately after the email went out saying, how do you know what we're using in our component?
Says, wow.
Well, it's
that's funny.
It's not hard to do chemical analysis or,
you know,
or a cross-section and take it apart. But we wanted to make sure that the construction that we're paying for and the formula we're paying for is actually there.
Yeah.
So we're not doing this on everything. Yet if we do have a problem, you're risking the relationship with us.
Right.
Right? So we trust you to do ship straight to our dock. We put it right on the products and everything's kind of going good. And we're watching. And we have the technical skill to watch.
This is especially important. We've kind of bypassed one of the most important forms of incoming inspection, which is first article inspection first article approval.
Right.
So I think you do need to spend a little extra time when you're making a design change and you want to verify, or if it's a brand new design,
right?
Whether it's a brand new design or a design change, you want to verify the supplier has implemented that design correctly. So first article inspection is very, very important. What I'm talking about when I talk about hating incoming inspection is ongoing inspection of production once the first article has been approved, right?
Yeah, so that's where I've always kind of hesitated at the important. I know that the first article inspection involves basically checking all of the specifications that we've laid out. So coatings, thicknesses, material composition, will it actually work as we thought? All those kinds of things apply. Did they make it the way we asked them to?
Right.
Yet the vendor knows that's important.
Yeah,
You know, they're going to do due diligence to make sure they send you the right thing is to the best of their ability. So if something fails there.
Oh, I agree. If something fails first article inspection, that is a huge red flag. I mean, this is supposed to be the vendor's opportunity to put their best foot forward.
Right. So I'd rather do the 100th article inspection or the 1,000th, you know, the first one's important. It helps us build trust and relationship and all that stuff.
Yep.
Yet I think is do the equivalent of a first article inspection periodically.
Got it.
Right?
Yeah.
Where if, because we know that processes change and drift, and they're constantly under price pressure to reduce costs. And so they
change lines.
They may have new operators running the system. They would get different raw material supplies. It's the original product that we bought is going to change.
Yep.
And we need to know that if the changes do occur, will it affect our product before it goes into our production?
Right.
Well, that's an argument back to that first you know, incoming inspection and do detailed work there. But that's the, I think you can get to that same objective by just demonstrating to your supplier that you're checking occasionally.
Yes. So there's one more thing I wanted to throw out here before. I know we've been spending a lot of time on this topic already, but I want to pass on the cost of incoming inspections, specifically any failures that I find as a result of incoming inspection. I want to pass that cost back to my supplier.
That makes sense when you get you get a batch and you realize that it's got, say, a 5% defect rate that you can inspect for.
Yeah.
But so you go back to your batches and you start doing incoming inspection because you have a known higher defect rate.
Right. If I have to increase my level of inspection on my side because of poor quality on the supplier's side, I want to pass that cost on. And I want to work with my purchasing team to make sure that's written into the terms and conditions of our contract with the supplier.
Right.
There needs to be accountability, financial accountability for quality failures on the part of the supplier. And again, if I have to introduce additional testing and inspection because of poor quality on the supplier side, they have to pay for it.
Yeah, it becomes part of that incentive and working with your supplier and the total cost of doing business with them.
Exactly, exactly.
Which I suspect is going to be a whole other discussion for us.
I think so.
Well, I think we're going to have to come back to this incoming inspection and this. I mean, because in today's supply chains, I mean, we're looking for the ultimate result is that a failure doesn't occur in the supplier's hand or in our customer's hands.
Yes.
Due to a supplier-initiated reason, root cause.
Exactly.
Yet the suppliers also are aggregating materials and content and components from their supply chain. So this could go back 4 or 5, maybe 10 steps.
Yeah.
Right. And so where's that cost benefit? Where do we really need to push it? And where do we need to, I suspect there's, critical components that can be damaged in shipment. We're probably not going to get out of incoming inspection.
Probably not.
Right.
Again, it's a matter of risk management. You know what, we can take these high positions. You know, we can talk about how we're going to push this back on the supplier. But in the end, the customer, our end customer, doesn't care if it's a problem that was caused by one of our suppliers.
That's right.
We are accountable. So we still got to put the right risk management processes in place. So I know it sounds really, all this tough talk about pushing it back on suppliers sounds really impressive, but I agree with you. I mean, we need to understand, again, it comes back to understanding what the failure modes are and what those causes are, and then how can we best, what are the best and lowest cost processes we can put in place to prevent those failures from occurring.
Right.
And again, this comes back to prevention versus testing and inspection.
That's right. Yeah, I'll underscore that part. And so as you're looking at your supply chain and as you're looking at the reliability of your products, and Tim and I both suspect that some portion of those failures are caused by mishaps or errors across your supply chain. I think our basic message here today is think hard and long before you just carte blanche apply incoming inspection to it. It does have a role. We'll come back and talk about some of those, that cost-benefit analysis. But let us know. What's working for you? When do you decide to do incoming inspection? Or if you have other questions that you'd like Tim and I or to discuss in this thing. So one of the best ways to get in touch with us is through iTunes and the ratings and review section. Or I think even more direct is just get a hold of us through the reliability.fm site, which lists Speaking of Reliability podcast. You can leave a comment on one or more of the any of the show notes has comment section of it, and let us know. Or you can track us down through the about pages and send us an email. And or send us a comment form. Tim and I think we agree a little bit too vigorously
that we need some opposing voices, right?
Well, also, I think it's a big topic. Let's tear it down to what people are really thinking about and what would be helpful for you. So I think that's more my goal.
Good.
But it is an interesting topic, and it highlights a lot of that relationship that you need to have overall with the supplier. So, all right, good. Well, let's wrap it up here, Tim, and have a great rest of your day. It happens to be Friday when we're recording this, so happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you, Fred. Let's talk again soon.
All right, take care. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.